Awesome. Well, maybe while folks are just coming in, maybe we can just sort of like tee up a little bit of, you know, what we'll be covering today. So I'll just introduce myself really quick for sort of folks in the room. My name is Iman. I'm the one of the product managers here at Arize, working on our LLM product line. Joined by Sally Yen. Sally, if you want to give a quick intro as well.
Yeah, sure. I'm Sally Yen. I'm also on the product team here at Arize. I work more on our core product team. My background's in data science and engineering, and I am super stoked to be talking about Claude 3 today.
Yeah, Sally, I feel like you're on so many of the paper reads. I'm sure that if you have a repeat audience here, there's going to be a lot of folks that recognize you there. Very, very excited to jump in. And for anyone who's new, feel free to drop any questions in the chat in the Q&A section. We'll be taking questions live if they're kind of relevant to what we'll be covering. I can't promise that we're going to have a lot of very pointed answers, because a lot of this, you know, a lot of the tech that we're covering is pretty new, but we can definitely try to hypothesize and share our anecdotes. So I do want to caveat that the space is moving so fast. We have not tried, these models out for everything that they're good for, but we can definitely share what we've learned so far.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. With that, maybe I'll hop in and just share my screen, and we can start covering what we're planning to kind of dive deeper on today. So today is long-awaited Claude 3. So this is the latest challenger from Anthropic. So we're going to be covering what was in the press release, and the model card that was also in conjunction released with the latest Claude models. We'll be kind of comparing, in the papers, there's a number of comparisons to Claude 2. So like, what are the performance improvements from just a year ago from release from Anthropic? But then also looking to compare to competitors out there, and then what we've seen so far in the last week since the release around capabilities, sort of what's new, what do these models seem to be good at. So I guess anything more to add there, Sally Yen?
No, I think this covers it. We'll do our best. Like Iman, you said, so new. It really hasn't been around for too long. So we're taking a lot of from that model card paper and what we're seeing online being talked about and what we're experimenting with, and just sharing our hypotheses here.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So with that, I think we wanted to jump into, so let's maybe cover what's new. So the bullet points of the TLDR, there's kind of three new models that we're going to be taking a look at. They're kind of cleverly named Haiku, Sonnet, Opus, and kind of similar to the Google, recent Google release as well from Gemini. They're kind of three models for three different sort of use cases. So you have Haiku, which is efficient, small, sort of a smaller model, meant for, maybe quicker inference, cheaper inference. Sonnet, you can kind of compare it to like a GPT, maybe like a GPT-4 turbo, 3.5 turbo, maybe closer to like a 3.5 turbo, just sort of like all rounded, but better performance than that now. And then Opus, which is like your, GPT-4 kind of highest performance, model that they're offering. These come with longer context windows, multimodal support, which is a new capability as well. In terms of the level of performance that you're going to get from multimodal, and then improved multilingual capabilities, and then a ton more in terms of, the latest evals that were kind of dropped in terms of, different tasks that these models are good at. So we'll definitely be diving deeper into that. With that, I think maybe we can jump into just the press release super quick and maybe cover that at a high level. So kind of typical to, I guess what's happening these days with these more closed source model providers, we didn't get a paper. So unfortunately, this paper read doesn't have a technical architecture we can cover. However, what we will be able to share is going to be more of like hands-on sort of practical what we're seeing these models being used for and how people are assessing them. But unfortunately, no architecture, we're not going to be able to break that down much more in terms of number of parameters, training data, the specifics there that we like to typically try and tear apart. Kind of one takeaway is, I think the at least for me, I don't know, Sally, and feel free to kind of jump in with any thoughts here. But I did want to tee up that, you know, the benchmarks that are being used, we're starting to see consolidate around, you know, pretty common set. I still have my questions around like how much these benchmarks are being used in the training data and what the crossover is, you know, now that these are becoming pretty well-known benchmarks that models are, you know, being released to kind of compare to. I don't know, any thoughts on that? Like, it's starting to feel more and more like, who knows how much leakage there is in the training data these days, right?
Yeah, it is super tough to say. And like you mentioned, we didn't really get an extensive paper. We got this, they called it a paper, but it was like this extensive model card, and they focused a little bit on the training part. And all they really said was they like deduped some information from like the internet, and they were kind of secret about like what closed source third party data they use. So I would totally like to see a little bit more transparency, especially from a company like Anthropic, where that's kind of their thing, to understand a little bit more what the overlap is. Because you're right, it's a little bit hard to trust that face value without knowing for sure whether it was included in that training set.
Yep. And we'll dive into the model card too, and just sort of break down what they have been able to share there. It seems like you know, one of the things that's kind of called out in the comparisons to Claude 2, but also in general, is performance improvements around latency. So, you know, Sonnet being 2x faster than Claude 2, being near instantaneous in terms of input tokens being processed, you know, archived, et cetera. You know, basically the use cases that they're trying to tee up, these models are going to be super helpful for, you know, being able to actually, you know, be able to take a large amount of input tokens, process them, and generate results and quote unquote near real time. They do also call out vision capabilities. So that's a, you know, that's a new bar as well. I like the comparisons to, you know, those same tasks compared to like your other sort of large multimodal models out there. Interestingly, they do call out that Gemini Ultra is actually still the leader in many of these tasks, which is, I thought that's interesting. Like on the same benchmarks, you know, they're not gonna claim that they necessarily win on things like, you know, document visual Q&A. It still seems to be like Gemini 1.0 Ultra, you know, the best performing Gemini model is definitely in the lead there. So that was pretty interesting as well. And then I thought this was also pretty like an interesting sort of, you know, heading to put in the press release, which is fewer refusals. Sally, do you want maybe to take this one on? I know we'll cover it a little bit more depth in the model card.
Yeah. So here, what they're specifically talking about is like when you ask Claude 3 a question, any of the versions of it, it's less likely to refuse a prompt that's kind of on the system guardrails, or if it's lacking context. Something about Anthropic is that they're kind of their mission is just to really bring a lot of transparency and guardrails and safety to the models that they build. So they take a lot of effort in implementing these guardrails. But with Claude 2, it was just refusing way too many things that it shouldn't have, things that weren't within those kind of red zones, if you will. So they made a really good attempt at fixing that. And the results definitely prove that they've improved it drastically. I think you can see there that it's like it went from refusing like 25% of harmless prompts down to like around the 10 based on the model. The HiQ looks to be maybe at like 6%. So it's definitely interesting. It's one of those problems where you don't want to overcorrect, right? You want to make sure that these systems are built safely, that they're not going to be targets of malicious intent, but you also want to make sure users or your whoever who's using these models are not getting frustrated by the model not answering. So it's kind of this fine line, especially for them who really put it at the center of their mission here. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think we'll get into an example too, but it's like I like that. I think the note is like the nuance to the response as well, which is like being able to detect, oh, is this actually it's almost like a classification. Is this actually this question, this prompt actually going to violate my policies? It's sort of like being asked a really hard question as a human being, right? Like, do I want to comment on this touchy subject or topic, or is the person actually, you know, asking for something I can still give an answer even if it's not, you know, exactly what the person is looking for? So it's less refusal. It's more giving an answer. But I thought that's interesting, you know. Yeah, exactly.
LLMs are now trying to grasp AI ethics, something that we're all trying to do. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Awesome. We got a couple questions already, so maybe we can tackle a couple of those before jumping into the model cards and the slides. Another point of contention, so Manas asks, another point of contention is whether they're using the same prompt for each of these evaluations. Each model works best on a different kind of prompt. Great question. Great comment here, actually. We're actually going to be covering a little bit more about how Claude is a little bit different from a prompting standpoint, but yep, each model has completely different prompts teeing up. You know, how they respond, not just in the evals, but in some of the benchmarks that you'll see as well. So, cool. And then they have hidden data sets for each test, right? So it's not self-proclaimed benchmarks. Yeah, I think that they're, I mean, I think that the comment is just more on, you know, whether the data set is hidden is one aspect of it, but also just how much of the data, you know, from these data sets is now public domain that could be considered, you know, part of the training set. I think that's more generally how we're, you know, looking to sort of understand better ourselves. It'd be great if like these data sets were, you know, a little bit more widely shared or, you know, that explicitly pruned in some way, but there's just no information around that.
Yeah, I think that's a complaint, if you will, that we get a lot is like, how do we reproduce these benchmarks that are always being put forth in these papers? And I think that's something that's really tricky. And I think the community as a whole would love to see a little bit more transparency on.
Awesome. Salian, where would you like to hop into our model card here?
Yeah, let's see. We should go down. Let's take a look maybe at some of more detail those refusals maybe, because we were just chatting kind of about that. I think that's an interesting kind of topic. There's some examples of the performance. We have these kind of standardized charts you can see there. Something that I thought was really interesting about this model card is a lot of it is dedicated to what guardrails they've put up, what tests they've done for their, like, I think we call it like red zoning or something like that. So it's very Anthropic in that way, because, you know, they're really those champions of transparency. Well, we could do the vision. Maybe the vision would be good since that's new for Claude 2. Grade. Let's take a look there.
Yeah, so they do image and video frame input. So kind of implying that like you can, you know, send in multiple frames of a video and also get you know, certain outputs there.
I think it's interesting there. I find it interesting that Gemini is still the leader there. I like that they did indeed call it out. Sometimes I find that they like just to leave out those models that perform better, but it's cool to see it kind of called out. And I think it gives them a benchmark to kind of work towards with the next iterations.
Kind of coming back to the prompting note, the symbol indicates chain of thought prompting as well. So you can see that a number of the benchmarks here that Claude is, you know, sort of generating results for actually use chain of thought prompting as well, which is interesting because we actually know that Claude tends to perform better when you repeat information. Actually, that tends to be actually something that a number of these LLMs are, you know, call out as being a, you know, whether it's a bug or a feature, the more you repeat the information, the stronger it seems to enforce that that concept or idea in the context. And so chain of thought is like one mechanism to reiterate a point. And so interestingly, that has made its way into the prompting technique for these benchmarks too.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what they're trying to do, because they make a call out that they've made, like, you know, significant progress in the vision and language understanding. So not only being able to actually just like read the text from an image, like doing that kind of classic like OCR type extraction, but actually understanding and having those like that complex visual reasoning. I think that chain of thought probably played a decent role in that.
Yep. You know, an example would be being able to interpret this image data like a chart and being able to, you know, extract the information from the chart, but then also be able to do math on top of it as an example.
for sure. It's pretty interesting stuff.
Okay. We're at refusals. Do you want to kind of cover this one? I know that you this was something that you spent some good time digging in on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. They even call it out in that like first sentence of this is like that trade-off between helpfulness and harmlessness. And so what they really do is just take a look at the, I think they use the WildChat data set. And they just are looking at these kind of user chat banter actions. I think there's, if you scroll down, not the next page, but the page after, you can kind of see the comparison between like what's considered like a benign response. And I think that kind of illustrates the point quite well. So you can see there, this is like, help me draft an outline for a science fiction novel, explains a little bit of what it wants. It's talk about social media as a surveillance system. So Claude 1 is saying like, hey, I can't really answer to that. You know, this is illegal. This is unethical surveillance activities, kind of missing the point that the user is not asking about it in a realistic sense. It's asking it so it can write, you know, a science fiction novel. So it's kind of that identifying that prompt incorrectly. And then you can see now with Claude 3 Opius, it realizes like, hey, this is kind of harmless. Yes, it mentions social media surveillance, maybe something in the real world context we wouldn't want to maybe speak on, but in this sense, it's harmless. So I think it's cool. I think that is definitely an important thing. I'm a big believer that we should have some decent guardrails to make sure that, you know, these models are not being abused as much as possible, spreading misinformation, things like that. So I'm happy to see that they've released them a little bit, those refusals, and it's making it more accurate, but also there's still a lot of thought that's being done on making sure that they're still safe. So they're really doing a great job of balancing it well. And it's cool to see that now, not only are they balancing it, but it's got some really good performance to go along with it. It's super
promising. Yeah, exactly. It's like the detection and nuance has definitely gone up. As an example in the paper, mm-hmm. they cover incorrect refusals versus correct refusals. Yeah. And so Claude 3 performs better across the board on incorrect refusals. Interestingly, you know, Claude 2 seemed to also be refusing to do, you know, a relatively, like, it hardly really refuses Claude 2.1 that seemed to be refusing more. So that's an interesting benchmark too, comparison. But then when you look at correct refusals, which are, you know, toxic requests in some way in this data set that we, you know, wouldn't be able to show examples of here, that is actually, you know, where Claude 3 still holds the bar quite well. So yeah, exactly. As you just noted, Sally, and it didn't regress on, you know, producing toxic results. It's just that it's more nuanced and the types of refusals it gives.
For sure.
Awesome. And then I think that there's another, you know, and they note that, you know, the way that they measure this is employing another model to grade responses. So they're actually using evals here, LLM, LLM sort of evals of, you know, as a LLM as a grader, did the model refuse correctly or not, basically, is another way to look at it. And then using string matching to identify if this was actually, you know, should have been a refusal or not. So, interesting to see, you know, the role of human graders is there, but more and more we're seeing LLMs performing the job of what would maybe be a human grader before, you know, even just a year ago.
For sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. I'll hop up. Looks like it just got signed up.
Oh no.
No one look at my password. Awesome. Cool. So that was kind of one major point. You have higher levels of quote unquote intelligence for the vast majority of workloads. This was an interesting slide. Do you want to take this one on, Sally? And then we'll kind of tee it up with the pricing slide.
Of course. Yeah. So, you know, whenever we do these kind of, you know, paper readings, when a new model comes out, I always kind of think like you all are probably wondering like, so what, like, why should I care? And this is actually a chart from Anthropic's docs. And I thought it just did a really good job of understanding like why Claude 3 is important, why you should care about it compared to Claude 2. So the top is just kind of the descriptions that we've already given you, you know, well-rounded, fastest, cheapest, kind of highest performing, the different strengths there. But I think like the lower half is actually what's really interesting. So I think first off, the multilingual, Claude 1 and Claude 2, they are, sorry, 2.1 and 2 had this capability, but you can see in the model card, the performance is much better in Claude 3. Vision is obviously new. We didn't have that in Claude 2, so that's going to be a new capability. And as you mentioned in that previous portion, the capabilities are better. It's not only just reading text off of an image, it's really having that kind of like critical thinking around the image. API formats are a little bit different. There's some better latency, as Aman pointed out. Context window here from Claude 2, it's bigger, but it's just the same as 2.1 here. Same with kind of max output, they're the same there. Cost, I'm sure, is something that's important to anybody who's going to use it here. So this just outlines the cost compared to the Claude models, as well as the training cutoff. And if you want to go to the next slide, which I think is also probably very important to people, is where does Claude hold up against its competitors? So it is a little expensive. It maybe is not that much different than say like a GPT-4, but like looking at maybe like Gemini or a Mixtral, it's definitely a little bit more pricey. These are the input or output prices per million tokens. Gemini's pricing, I will note, is a little bit different than the rest of the providers on how they price. So you might see some kind of different pricing depending on what you're looking to do with Gemini, but another interesting thing I think is the context window. So Claude 3 has got a lot higher of a context window. I have my thoughts on really long context windows. I'm not super convinced that that's the solution. Aman, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on that. But it's interesting to see that we have, like, we hear that Gemini, you know, 2 or whatever it is, 1.2, is going to have like a million token context window. So you definitely see that there's these model providers that are pushing this larger context window to try to get more information in, maybe Ragsted, like hear all this stuff. But I'm interested to see if that's actually the future, because we've seen some, you know, conflicting research on that, whether they can really attend to all that context.
Yeah, we didn't put the slide. So I think on the cost note, so we'll actually, the cost note is an interesting one. I think in doing this research, we were kind of surprised, like Mixtral is super low cost as well. Gemini, you know, Gemini Pro, et cetera. I mean, there's definitely a lot of optimization to do, I think, on the cost side to make these models more affordable for a variety of tasks. But still, for a million tokens, it's actually, I mean, that's a lot of tokens. And I think that 200K context window, 200K token context window, I think just bringing that up, I think that there is a, so this is the recall accuracy over context length. So we'll dive a little bit more into some evals around context limits and context windows, but the TLDR is that, you know, context windows increasing means that the models can, you know, can basically, you can stuff more data into the context, which means that your retrieval of data from a vector database starts to become, you know, it's still important to evaluate what exactly you're retrieving, how it's being stuffed into the context, but it's a lot more forgiving now if your context window is larger. The thing is, though, the way that like context windows are being assessed and these kind of like needle in a haystack, you know, types of tests, which are, you know, stuff some data, some part into the context and retrieve that data. So, you know, it might be like a pair or a key value pair or some other type of data. It's, I think a big question is like, how representative are those tests on large context windows in the first place? And should you actually be trying to evaluate, the model's reasoning capability instead of it's just like pure retrieving a key value from, you know, and just like returning that value from the context window. So I think it's like a pretty hotly debated area of, okay, even if the context window is increasing, are we evaluating those larger context windows the right way compared to just a better retrieval system in the first place? So that's definitely an area that I think is open in terms of, you know, research and as you can see, it's making its way into like the mainstream in terms of the model card and Claude and even Gemini 1.5 Pro, the 1.5 million token context window model from Google. You know, kind of posting that as their, you know, Jeff Dean retweeting that information. I mean, I think that really goes to show that those investments in context lens are, they're really starting to break into the mainstream.
For sure. It's an interesting call out about the eval side of it.
Yeah. Especially on recall is interesting, but how much is, how much are we actually pushing the capabilities of those context limits in terms of, what we're actually evaluating them with. That might be a good transition over into sort of how we're evaluating evaluating retrieval in the first place. So this is actually some research that we've shared out from the Arise sort of AI research team here. We actually did a kind of similar test to what you're seeing in the needle in a haystack, but we made it a little bit harder. So this is what we're calling retrieval with generation. It's not a normal haystack retrieval test. And by the way, you can always follow our research on Twitter. I'm using Aparna's Twitter handle here. This is an aggressive variation of haystack that is retrieving two random numbers, rounding those numbers. So it's doing a little bit of intelligence, a little bit of math there of like, what number should I round to? Formatting it and then calculating a percent of growth. So it's actually a practical task on top of retrieval. It's not just, let's look at the recall or let's look at, how well the model is retrieving data from its context window. It's how well is it actually using the data from its context window. And that I think is, for what it's worth, Claude actually, Opus Claude 3 actually performs really quite well at that task, even compared to Claude 2.1, which was when we, kind of put out a result initially with the needle in a haystack with Claude 2.1 that, kind of showed that you had to prompt it differently and all these other things. Now you're actually seeing that, with the right prompt, that it's actually, performing at GPT levels of GPT-4 levels of performance there. And we basically scored that up against other types of eval tasks as well. So I think that the one that's kind of called out here, date mapping in addition, that's another type of like perform a task in this case that's retrieving data and doing more sort of calculations on top of that in the context window. GPT-4 still, wins at that task, but I mean, honestly, the result looking at Claude 3, it's night and day compared to Claude 2.1. So clearly, there's been a ton of investment in making the longer context windows more useful. But what's interesting is and these tests are always so interesting because they depend on things like how we prompt or the apples to apples comparison can be tough in some cases as well. But a normal haystack retrieval test, it does look like Claude 3 didn't necessarily perform better than GPT-4 on that. So for what it's worth, it is interesting to see that there is still variance in those tasks depending on how what the task is, if it's just vanilla kind of retrieve information or if it's perform calculations on top of it. Coming back to the importance of evals, I think in general. So whether or not you're using a haystack test to determine, okay, is this model going to be good at just stuffing the whole, an SAC filing in and performing a calculation, you probably still want an eval on top of that to make sure that whatever is being generated, you're checking it by another model. We did also see massive improvements in Claude 4 as a judge. So I think there was a question, or sorry, Claude 3 as a judge. There was a question on which model is being used to judge the toxicity of the results of the correct refusals. And I mean, it's very possible that that ends up being Claude 3. Claude 3 does quite well at that. So maybe a real challenger there in terms of LLM evals and a new judge that we might be leveraging more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like it's been so long since we've really seen anybody be able to kind of hold up against GPT-4. So it's exciting time. And I think, the last part of this thread here where Aparna kind of talks about the prompting, I think that that talks about one of the questions we got in the chat there. That's just like, I think there's a lot of research, as Aparna points out here, on like the prompting approaches. I still think that there's, and even Aman, you mentioned it, like the optimization around that, I think it's going to be really key. And I'm interested to see, like, as we focus on that a little bit more, and we maybe, I think, just take time to work with Claude 3, like it's new. We've been, everyone's been experimenting with GPT-4 for quite some time, and I'll be interested to see as we do the same with Claude 3, what results we get from that.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of reiterate as well, like reiteration is sort of seems to be the trick here a little bit, even more than perhaps chain of thought, that we're finding that just repeating the instruction, you know, in the prompt. This is actually a good note. Maybe we should put some of those prompts up just to see, just to show how we're, you know, repeating the prompt here. But, you know, literally repeating the instruction generates much stronger, you know, much stronger results.
Yeah.
We just is there a list of...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to go for it?
No. I was going to ask you. I was like, I don't know of an exhaustive list. I kind of know there's, I feel like blogs and Twitter threads and Reddit threads on like general guidelines, but I don't know if there's a collective, but Aman, you might know better.
Yeah, no, I mean, for different models, I think like, I mean, I saw a bunch coming out this week. We'll cover a couple in the last sort of slides here of like prompting techniques for Claude 3. I can't say I've seen a conclusive, you know, database of different types of prompting techniques per model, per task, but that seems like an area that, you know, probably someone should go and tackle, you know, being able to capture all of that.
Sure.
What really long prompts or context? So there's another question. I'd be curious to see what really long prompts or context, whether Claude 3 can outperform GPT-4, not forgetting as much of the prompt. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a little bit of what we're testing here. It's a little adjacent, but where we often have to reiterate the prompt to get, you know, strong responses. But it's hard to say how often you have to reiterate the prompt for GPT-4 versus GPT or versus Claude 3. And if like, you know, I mean, in general, it sort of comes back to like the prompting technique, how much of your context window do you want to give up to the same prompt or to the same instruction to get a reliable result? So it turns out just repeating the instruction, you know, does a really good job of giving you better results. And so maybe that's just one of the features of these LLMs.
For sure.
But great question there. And something I'm curious to see too. That's probably a great eval as well, just to see how much do you need to reiterate results or reiterate prompts.
It's our next research topic.
Yeah, it might be. That's a good point. Awesome. Yeah. So, all right. So let's get into, I think, like maybe last 10 minutes here. I think it'll be fun. This one's going to be fun. So, all right. So we talked a little bit about theory, a little bit about evals, the training data, the benchmarks. Let's get into some hot takes. Italian, do you want to kind of take this one? I remember when we were prepping for this, you were like, well, I saw something different on, I sent a Hacker News thread. I'm like, wow, Claude seems to be doing really well. You sent over this Reddit thread. Do you want to, that is sort of like, you know,
yeah.
Like, I guess like, yeah, let me tee up the Hacker News one and then we can jump over. So Hacker News, there was a post that went out 2 days ago. You know, if you use GPT-4 Turbo and Claude, which one do you prefer? A lot of people 2 days ago saying Claude for, you know, the writing style. It's you know, it's almost like a breath of fresh air in terms of it doesn't seem AI generated, you know, maybe because people are getting used to GPT's, you know, writing style or writing the style of its writing generation. Claude for coding, people moving over to Claude, like, you know, finding it to be much better. And then you kind of shot over. Well, there's this Reddit thread that you found. Do you want to take on this one?
Yeah, it was just really interesting. As Aman said, I was reading that thread and I was like, oh, people really love this. And Aman either, I think it's just the Anthropic message board or the LLM dev message board, one of the two. And I saw this, you know, thread on Claude 2. And of course, as we're prepping, I'm like, let me take a look at this. And like one of the top threads over the last 2 days is like, how do I get back to Claude 2? Claude 3, it's horrible. It sounds like GPT or ChatGPT. I used to like Claude 2 because it didn't. I think one of the, actually the first, I don't have it here, but like, I think one of the first responses is like, oh, that's weird. Like there's a lot of people saying other things, but then there's a massive list of people saying like this one, like this, like you know, it used to be like one request or two to get it to where I wanted it to be with a meaningful reply. And now I'm like, I'm running out of messages I can send with my like free account to get Claude 3 to respond. So it's just really interesting to see kind of this like polarizing view in the community. Some people are like all for Claude 3. They think it's much better than GPT-4, but then we've got some other folks that are just saying, you know, they hate it essentially. They want Claude 2 back. So it's interesting to see. I think this is maybe, you know, a symptom of it being so new. People are still getting used to it. You know, I think we'll see this kind of back and forth. I think we see it almost with every new model that we get. Like there's a lot of hype around it, and then maybe people play around with it and they're like, maybe it's not as great, and vice versa.
Yeah, I feel like there's maybe like two kind of meta, you know, ideas that kind of come to mind here when I see this type of debate. One is that it feels a lot like when a new piece of tech, like you just called out, Sally, and a new piece of tech is released. For instance, when Facebook, I'm dating myself here, but when Facebook would like redesign their news feed and like they took away the wall and people freaked out about that. They're like, oh my God, I'm never going to use this product again. Or like Apple takes away like Touch ID. It's like people get used to something and they're kind of used to the writing style of these models in some way. And when it's new or when it's different, it can kind of freak people out because it's less consistent. I think that there's a certain degree of, you know, you get used to something and then this is different.
Sure.
So I wonder how much of that is just human behavior being reflected here. And then the other part is, you know, even if the model is better, are we prompting it the right way, right? And like getting results the way that we would expect. So it is really interesting to see such a polarizing response to this tech. But I wonder if it's actually the humans that are, you know, looking at the data and scratching our head and wondering, oh, is it better or worse? Versus like, are we even utilizing it, you know, this newer tech the right way? So yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting when I saw the debates here. So maybe the jury is still out, you know, it's contentious. It's the jury is out. At least the internet hasn't really voted. You know, I don't know. There's the ELO scores that you can look at as well for like model, you know, LM arenas or LM arenas to compare as well. You know, like the sort of blind sort of taste test here. But at the same time, like it does look like anecdotally for writing or for coding tasks, you know, people are a little bit split. I did want to kind of like also call out a couple of kind of interesting kind of notes here on how would I use it. So anecdotally, I can say I'm starting to try to use it more for coding tasks. It looks like, you know, the sort of, if you look at the loss on for Haiku on code, these models are like, it looks like Anthropic is really investing more and leaning into code. And that they call this out. This is also in the press release and the, you know, in terms of like, you know, what I think it was added in the press release of the model card. But coding is like a core capability here. And there are some pretty interesting Twitter threads that we saw around this. So one is by this person, Alex Burt. They actually call out that you can prompt Claude to essentially create its own sub agents to build apps, which is kind of interesting. I think a lot of people saw the Devin example from earlier in the week. But this is one where, you know, Claude actually, you know, creates a set of instructions that get sent to Haiku, shards them out as like sub agents to actually, you know, those tasks are then used as prompts for a sub call for a Haiku, which is a cheaper model. So you actually end up getting back a large amount of code that sort of works together to solve a task. I thought that was really interesting because it's like almost orchestrating agents within the LLM call itself. I hadn't seen that before, and this was a pretty interesting new kind of technique. So using Claude to actually create sub agents to perform things like coding tasks was kind of interesting as well.
For sure.
Let's see. I'll let this demo sort of round its way out here. So it says, you know, test to deploy. But I mean, this is like, again, you can kind of see the amount of text that's generated really leveraging that longer context window. Pretty interesting to see it kind of work here end to end. At the same time, like, you know, I think it's all, I have seen some examples of these coding blocks that are generated that you do still have to tweak aspects of it to get it to work. So here's another one, which is, again, a lot of the code examples seem to be like end or visualization JavaScript code. This one is another one. I asked Cloud3 to generate an animation. This is from Rahul. For the POV of a neuron in a large neural net, it gave me this. So it actually seems to be a pretty cool animation, JavaScript animation that, you know, it kind of looks really interesting. It looks really cool. Like it's, I remember using like GPT for animations, and this just seems to be way more visual, very mm-hmm. interesting. It's almost like taking liberty, artistic liberty there. But tagline is the code just needed a couple minor tweaks. So you do still need a human in the loop there to modify the code a little bit. Didn't seem to work out of the box. But it, you know, it's it is interesting that it's like, you know, the way that it's showing how it works seems to take a lot more almost like artistic liberty in the types of visualizations, which is pretty cool to see.
For sure. It is really interesting. I totally agree with that artistic liberty was not there with GPT-4. Just those, a lot of times when you ask for visualizations, they're just really rough. So it's cool to see it with Claude 3 improving. And there are some really cool visuals I've seen come out of it.
Yeah. I think, you know, one note is, you know, feel free to share your own thoughts as well on this. I think we're always looking for folks to share ideas around maybe different types of prompting techniques. In general, we'll be trying it out more as well for coding tasks. But we'd love to get input from folks who are trying it out for evals, prompting it for different tasks, maybe coding as well, or writing, and just dropping their thoughts as well in our community. Can take the discussion from there. But yeah, I appreciate most, you know, everyone for asking sort of questions and engaging in this. And yeah, thanks for dropping in. Feel free to keep the conversation going in Slack. And yeah, would love to kind of, you know, kind of keep sharing ideas there as well as we get a little bit deeper on evaluating Claude for ourselves.
For sure. I did see one, I guess, before we hop, if folks are here, I did see that there was one question that we might have missed while we were answering. It was about kind of like, looks like niche kind of languages and making sure that they're accurate and culturally sensitive for communication. That's something that they do call out that, you know, they call them like low resource languages. So I think anything that is really nuanced with language is something that's going to be really difficult for these large language models. You can have, you know, Italian, Spanish, many languages that have like a lot of dialects going on. So mastering that nuance, I think, is going to be a challenge. And I think that's just like another place where, you know, you kind of need that human in the loop to make sure that you're kind of respecting and being accurate for all of those. So sorry for missing that one earlier.
Yeah, thank you for calling that out. And exactly. You need more data. You need more humans to kind of generate that data for these models to perform well on it.